Hey, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Virtualicious podcast. I'm very pleased to have you here today. But today's a bit different. Today is not about food at all. Today is a difficult subject that I want to talk about. It's a personal subject. My dad had coronavirus, and I have this platform, this podcast, where I can, you know, talk about important issues. And I thought that it was important that I talk about this because it's obviously something that's affecting a lot of people at the moment. And if I can share my story, and if some of what I say helps somebody that's going through something similar, then, you know, that can only be a good thing. And I ask that you share this episode with as many people as you can, and people that you think would benefit from hearing about this story, because, you know, it's only when you're in this situation that you realise how much it would have helped to have heard what somebody else went through when they were going through it. And it's different for everybody, but yeah, that's what I ask. Please do share, just hit share on this episode, send the link to people that would benefit. So yeah, I'm going to not talk about food today, and I'm going to talk about my experience of my dad having had coronavirus. Before I go on, I'm actually going to ruin the punchline and say that actually he's fine. So there's no need to worry. He's absolutely fine. He's completely recovered, and you know, it's over, it's done, and he's fine. But still, regardless of that, there's so much, it had such an impact on me and on him and on my mum. And also, I want to talk about how, so there's the emotional aspect, but I also want to talk about how we dealt with it, both emotionally, but also physically, how we kept ourselves safe, and how we benefited from the support that we got, and, you know, some of the support that you may be able to get if you're in a similar situation. As I say, this is a difficult episode. It's not something that I've not really shared sort of personal stuff in this way before. So please bear with me and with all my ers and ums that are coming out. Because it's, you know, it's obviously difficult to talk about something that's been quite emotional. So a little bit of background about my dad. He is, he's 75, he's Asian, he's a man, he's overweight, he's got diabetes. So he is, on the face of it, in a high-risk category. So I'm amazed that he's okay. I'm absolutely amazed that he's okay, and I'm so pleased that he's okay. He also has dementia, so that it's not advanced dementia, but it does make it more difficult to communicate some of the things that are going on. He's still very much with it. It's just that it means that things, we need to take our time a little bit more when we're explaining and when we're kind of negotiating how to go about stuff. So yeah. So I was really worried, you know, really, really worried about him when we got the diagnosis. So let me tell you a little bit about how he got it. So I'm staying with my parents to help care for him through this period, because we have really tried to keep him safe, but also ourselves safe. And we've had some help. So we have district nurses to come and administer his medication, because there's some complexities there. And we had a befriender come and see him once a week, and we got rid of all of those services, and I've kind of taken on that role. And that's why I'm here, because we wanted to keep him safe. We didn't want people coming in potentially with the virus. And so we've been really careful. We've hardly gone out shopping, doing all online deliveries. We're only going out for essentials. We're going for walks, but, you know, keeping our distance when we walk past someone in the street. So we've been super careful, coming home, washing our hands straight away, having separate towels, you know, we've really thought it out and, you know, had this kind of process in place to keep safe. So what happened was my dad had, he was ill. So we've been, you know, doing whatever we can to try and stop him from being in hospital, because in the past he's had episodes where he's been in hospital and we absolutely didn't want that to happen. So when this is the first time since the virus you know, came about that he got ill, and you know, that's pretty something for him, because he has spent quite a lot of time, you know, he's been in hospital quite a number of times in the past. So the fact that he hasn't got ill all this time was very, you know, we were very happy, we were very relieved about that. And then all of a sudden he got ill, and we didn't really want to call the paramedics because of the risk, but we had to. He was very ill. And so we called, we did call the paramedics, and when they were there, we had the patio door wide open to keep it ventilated. And they came in with their PPE. I'm not sure if at one point one of them took her mask down to, while she was trying to get him to respond to her. He wasn't responsive for a while. And she kind of almost like blew a raspberry and got him to try and show him to sort of blow a raspberry to see how responsive he was, I'm guessing. And I really don't remember, but I'm wondering whether she took her mask off to do that, because otherwise, how do I remember that she was blowing a raspberry? I don't know. Anyway, and I'm wondering whether that was the point at which, you know, because of the force with which she blew the air out, he breathed that air in and got the virus through that. I'm wondering. Later on, my mother and I tested negative, so we know it's not us that gave him the virus. So the only people that he had seen were the paramedics. And so I'm thinking, you know, don't get me wrong, they do a great job. I'm not trying to accuse them of anything at all. I'm just saying this is how I think he got it. And they said at the time that we should get a coronavirus test. And I was thinking, oh no, you know, he hasn't got coronavirus. But, you know, they advised us to get a test, so we did. But before I go on to that, what they said to us was that he needed to go into hospital. And I absolutely didn't want him to go into hospital because of the virus, and I was worried about him catching the virus. And luckily, we have a power of attorney in place. And this is really important, because the first thing they said to us is, you know, do you have a power of attorney in place? We said yes. And they said, okay, well, then it's your decision. We can't force you. And what that did immediately was remove all of the stress of us feeling like we're not in control of someone that we care so deeply about, and the safety of that person. So the power of attorney was such an easy thing to do. It was very cost effective to do it on our own. We didn't get legal advice to do it. You can just go on the Gov website. I don't know if it's Gov website now. There was a website, and literally, but you go through it through official channels. There's an official website, and they guide you through it, and it cost, oh, I can't remember how much. And then 10 weeks later, you've got your power of attorney. And then you're safe. Then you can make those decisions. And I highly recommend, no, sorry, I don't recommend, because I don't want to be sued. But, you know, for me, that was a really, really important thing that we did. And just to be clear, I guess, I wanted to make clear that in this episode, I'm not giving anyone advice. I'm not, you know, you make your own decisions, and I'm not, you know, I'm just telling you about my story and just sharing that with you. And yeah, I mean, the power of attorney, I'm so pleased that we had it. It's not, we haven't had it for, you know, loads of time. It's the first time we had to use it, and I'm very glad that we did that. So, yeah, when the paramedics were here, we stood outside as well. Me and my mum stood in another room, sort of by the door, peering in to try and keep ourselves safe. And I wish I'd given my dad the mask sooner, but as soon as kind of there's so much going on, as soon as it came to my mind, I was like, okay, let's get a mask on him so that we can keep him safe. Unfortunately, I was too late in thinking about that. So it's something to really think about. Have a mask to hand even at home. So if you call the paramedics, then it's easy to put that on. Again, I'm not giving you advice. I don't want to be sued. So, we went to such great lengths to keep him and to keep ourselves safe. The paramedics advised us to get a COVID test, so did our doctor. And we did. And we, I was like, oh, we don't need a COVID test. He's not been exposed to it. And so when I got the results, I was in shock. I didn't believe it. I read the text because it comes through on a text in case you haven't seen it before. And it told me that it was positive, and I just kept. I looked at it three times thinking, how is it positive? How could that happen? And then retracing the steps, I think that he got it from the paramedics. It came through first thing in the morning. I was in bed and I was just thinking, how am I going to tell my mum? Like, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to tell my dad that he's got coronavirus? Like, what? How am I going to do this? So I quickly got up. No one else was up, and I tried to get everything in place. So I tried to get the breakfast, because we have to give my dad his breakfast. He's disabled as well as everything else. And so I wanted to get that ready and get mum's stuff ready and just get everything prepared. So that once I'd told my mum, if she was fine, if she didn't handle it well, then it was okay. There was nothing else urgent that needed to be seen to. And I remember the first thing I said to my mum was, this may be the last few days that we have with him. Because has so many ailments, he's so ill. I was so scared that this was going to be it, and we did everything for him. We let him have his own way. He can be very difficult sometimes. We let him have his own way. We let him get away with murder. And I just wanted him to be happy. I just wanted him to. If it was his last few days, I wanted those few days to be happy for him. So, yeah, I mean. We treated him really well. I was counting the days. Is it 14 days until his, until when the symptoms come? Because you usually get symptoms in 5 days, but you can get symptoms up to 14 days later. And then I'm reading, and actually, it could be 17 days later. It could be longer. Counting the days, endless reading of all of the. The internet, just searching and searching and searching and reading studies to try and figure out how long it is that we need to wait to see whether he's actually going to get the symptoms. In the end, he didn't get any symptoms. I cannot believe that he was asymptomatic given his health condition. I'm so really, even now, he's fine now. I know that he won't get symptoms now. I know he's over it. But that's how worried I was, and that's how concerned I was. The way that it impacted me, the stress, I didn't cry or anything like that. I was worried. I was very worried. I found it hard to kind of do so much, hence it being a while since my last episode. And I was really tired. So I was kind of getting up to do stuff that needed to be done for my dad. I mean, we were keeping a distance from him anyway. And then I spent a lot of time sleeping. I was sleeping for a few hours in the afternoon and then all night again. And I was just thoroughly exhausted. And I think it's just, that amount of stress, of that worry that this could be it, that's how it manifested itself for me. And obviously it's going to affect different people in different ways, but for me, that's how it impacted me. Luckily, my dad was able to understand what was going on and comprehend it. And also luckily he was, kind of working with us to keep us safe and keep himself, well, you know, he was kind of taking steps that we asked him to take, and in terms of saying, like, keep hydrated, for example, which usually can be quite difficult, but I think because he understood the enormity of the situation, he was complying with what we were asking him to do. Even when we were letting him get away with murder, you know, he kind of understood that there were things that he needed to do to help the situation, so I'm grateful for that. But yeah, it was really, you know, it was really difficult. And even like now, I'm only just catching up, getting out of that sort of tiredness. We were really, really lucky as well. So whilst the paramedics were here and we said, we don't want to send my dad to hospital, we had the power of attorney. So they said, okay, we need to call the GP to get get him to prescribe the medication that he needed. It was strong antibiotics to get him better, and that we would be able to care for him at home. And the doctor, I've got to say, is, I don't know if he'll mind me saying his name. If he does, I'll edit it out later. It's Dr. Ma from in Folkestone, and the paramedics were absolutely blown away with how amazing he was and how supportive he was. And I've got to say, I'm so, so blown away by how supportive he was to me and my mum and my dad. Straight away, he prescribed the antibiotics, as any doctor would. But also, he thought about it after he'd put the phone down to the paramedics. And he called back, and he tried to call back with the paramedics. I don't think he got through. No, he tried to call back to us on our house phone, and we didn't pick it up because we were dealing with my dad and paramedics. So then he called the paramedics. He managed to get through to them somehow. And he said, oh, I was just thinking, I think I need to put in place a care package to help them care for him while he's not well. I mean, you know the budget constraints of the NHS, and you know what's going on right now. And he did that. I mean, he knows that our case is very specific and it's a very difficult situation. We do, you know, we are supported well by the NHS because of these the issues that we need to deal with. But, you know, nonetheless, what he did was absolutely amazing. So he put in place carers or care staff, I'm not sure exactly what they're called, to come and help get my dad washed and ready in the morning. And that was absolutely amazing, because they come in fully kitted out with their PPE, and they know what they're doing, and they can be very quick. And also my dad is more compliant with them because, you know, they're strangers, they're not me or my mum. And that meant that me and my mum could keep ourselves safe by not having to go too near him to, you know, for too long, because when you're washing and cleaning someone, that's you know, you're more exposed than if you're just taking in a tray of food for him, exposed to the virus, I mean. So that was so helpful. And the doctor was also really kind and took time to talk to us, to kind of help us to, well, he tried to help us to relax and to stay calm and not worry too much. Obviously, you know, I am going to worry, but the fact that he was supportive meant so much, so much, you know. And to know that the doctor was there, if we need him, he cared, and he would call us, you know, call us back. That meant so much. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that. So, you know, there's the whole thing about us looking after my dad, but then there's also how we protected ourselves. We've talked, you know, the emotional impact that it had on me, but also, you know, physically, we had to stay safe from getting the coronavirus ourselves. You know, it took a couple of days after him getting it for us to get, you know, we got the test and we realised it was positive. Then we started taking precautions. And the precautions that we took, I think really did, were good. And I think they, you know, they helped us to stay safe. First of all, what I'll say is my dad didn't get a high dose of the coronavirus because the room was well ventilated when the paramedics were there, if indeed it was them that he got it from. And I've read about if you're in an unventilated place, I guess, and there's someone with the virus and it's building up in the air, then you can get a stronger dose and therefore have worse symptoms. Whereas because it was so well ventilated, you know, I think that's why he had fewer symptoms. Obviously, you know, I'm not a doctor, but, you know, this is kind of me reading into things and based on all the things I've read. And so we're trying to try to do the same thing for ourselves. So we ramped up the heating. He needs to be warm because of, you know, because he's so ill. And so we ramped up the heating in the house, we opened the windows and kept it so well ventilated, because I think that is, I think that's a real game changer in staying safe. We also stayed outside of his room unless we had to go and serve him some food or help him with something specific. And even when we did that very quickly. We had designated space. We were wearing masks and gloves, and we had a designated space to put the mask down when we left the room, and then, you know, pick it up and put it on when we go back into the room. So there's like a process there to keep ourselves safe and to stop the mask from going from place to place in the house and potentially spreading the virus. We wore gloves now. So one of the things about washing hands so much is the hands get really dry. And we had some of those latex gloves, you know, surgical kind of gloves. But again, they're a bit fiddly to put on and take off. So in the end, what I did, and I've talked about this thing before, I used washing up gloves, and I used elbow grease washing up gloves. And I've mentioned them in the washing up sucks episode because I think they're so good. And this just proved how good they are, because they're strong, they're sturdy, and they fit so well that I was able to administer my dad's medications, like insulin pen, and do his blood sugar test with a finger prick test. I could do all of that with these washing up gloves on. I would never have thought that I'd be able to do that, because usually washing up gloves aren't, you know, they're quite loose, and it's difficult to kind of handle things with precision things with washing up gloves on. But these are brilliant. The elbow grease washing up gloves, love them. No, I don't like get any money for saying that. It's just I do think they're brilliant. And so what I'd do with the washing up gloves is, before I was dealing with him in any ways, I'd put those on, and I'd kind of mastered a way of putting them on so it's only touching the very top, and, you know, not transferring the virus if I touched anything. And then I'd go and serve him. And then I'd go back to the sink and I'd wash my hands with soap and water. So wash my hands with the gloves on. So wash the gloves in soap and water while I'm wearing them. And then I would dry the gloves with a separate towel, take them off, and then go about doing my stuff. And that way I wasn't washing my hands so much. But I was still staying very safe. And I was very careful when I removed the gloves to make sure that I wasn't touching the top of the gloves when I was removing them. So I was just pulling them off really with the finger end and with the gloves on, sort of thing, like using the glove to pull the other glove off. So using the glove from one hand to pull the glove off the other hand off. So I don't know if that makes sense. Anyway, that's what I did. And that worked. That was a massive game changer. And things like his tray, so we'd take food into him, then when we took the food back, I'd put all of his crockery and utensils straight, and the tray that I took it in, straight into the sink, and wash that straight up and put it on the dryer, so that, you know, I'm not kind of spreading the virus around. So I was being mindful in everything that I did, and that, again, you know, is exhausting. So I'm sure that contributed to some of the exhaustion. And all this time, you know, I missed him. I missed, you know, giving him a hug and giving him a kiss and talking to him, smiling and joking. You know, we had a bit of a smile and joke, but conversation was also fairly limited because we were trying to keep our distance. You know, but at the same time, you know, every day I'm counting, you know, one more day and he's okay. Like, you know, one more day of him being okay. And, you know, if I have to wait 17 days, like, I've only got another sort of 6 days left, 5 days left, you know, really kind of really counting the days. And I wasn't just counting once a day, I was counting it several times a day. Like, the number didn't change, but I was just, you know, so obsessed with whether he was going to be okay. I was so worried. And talking about it now, I, you know, feel that worry well up again inside me. You know, it was just kind of like constantly on my mind. And again, I was constantly scouring the internet for studies and for news and to find out all of the things, you know, that would help me to understand what his likelihood of being okay was. I have a really good friend of mine as well, and her friend's a doctor. Her sister's a respiratory doctor working on the wards with COVID patients. And I was texting her, and it's one of my best friend's sisters, so I was able to, you know, text and or call her and ask questions for her to pass on to her sister. And that, again, you know, provided me with some comfort. Not that the answers that I was getting were inducing comfort, because they were just like, every case is different, blah, blah, blah. But just knowing that someone cared enough to ask me if I was okay, and for me to then pass that, for her to go and ask her sister, and for her sister to come back with answers, you know, it was just nice to be cared for. Talking about that, I was very insular in dealing with this. I didn't reach out for help. I told a couple of friends. We didn't tell the wider family. And that's because it was all consuming, and I needed my energy to deal with this and not to spend talking to other people. And, you know, as much of a comfort as it is to talk to other people, I suppose, like, I felt like I just needed the comfort of one or two people to be there if I needed them, and I couldn't deal with lots of phone calls and lots of texts at the time. And, you know, there's a real balance about, you know, not wanting to offend people by not telling them, but at the same time, taking care of my own well-being, really. But then it was Diwali, and we were going to have Zoom calls with the wider family, and in advance of that, I, you know, discussed with my mother, and I was like, we're going to have to be wearing masks while we're on the Zoom call, because we're still not past the point at which he's contagious and he may still develop symptoms. So we need to warn the family, tell them what's happened, so that they can, you know, understand when they see us in the masks and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, that all takes its toll on you as well. You know, the not communicating and then the communicating, and, you know, deciding on what's best and worrying about what people will think. And, you know, that was a minefield in itself. So then there was the, you know, the isolation. So he had to isolate, but then we had to isolate because we were in the same household as him. I'm talking about the quarantine period. And I've got to say that I'm so grateful that I am in Kent in Folkestone, in an area where there's lots of space, and you know, we have a garden, we've got great neighbours, and not that we really saw them apart from when I opened the door to check something, and I saw them across the road and they asked how I am, and I told them. But just knowing that they're there and knowing how much they care, because we're very close neighbourhood here, made the world a difference. You know, it really makes a difference knowing that if I needed anything, they were there. You know, they said, you know, I will do, you know, get you something next time we order shopping. And yeah, it's just the normal stuff, but they really did care. You know, that they were genuine, and that made the world of difference. And just knowing that people care really helps. And I would say that, you know, although I was say, I'm saying that I was dealt with it in an insular way and told very few people, it's important to tell someone that is going to be there for you. And also about telling someone that's going to be there for you, or I'm not giving advice, but, you know, for me, telling someone that I knew that was going to be there for me was important. It came to a point where I actually told somebody that that I didn't think would be there for me. And I was right, they weren't there for me. And it was important for me to protect myself against people like that as well, because that can really bring you down. And but because I was aware that they weren't going to be there for me, I was able to kind of set myself up emotionally to deal with that. Yeah, and also because we're in this world of Zoom, you know, it's easy also to keep in touch with people through all the different channels, you know, Zoom, WhatsApp, FaceTime, all of those things make a massive difference. And also my dad had a couple of friends that once we told them quite early on what was going on, they called him, and one of them, Don, it's a very good friend of my dad, phoned every single day to see how he was and to talk to him. And, you know, that's what you want. You want people that, you know, care, and when the chips are down, they're there. And he proved himself, and you know, I'm not going to forget that in a hurry. That was, you know, that was really, really lovely. Really lovely to have that. So yeah, you know, enough days passed by, and then we got to the point where it was apparent that he was going to be okay, and the symptoms were not going to come up because enough time had passed. And eventually I could hug him again, I could give him a kiss, and that was really nice. There was also a doubt, you know, everyone doubted whether he actually ever had it, and lots of people, or a few people, said to me, including him, oh, maybe it was a false positive test, you know, he was saying, oh, maybe it was contaminated. And, you know, how do I deal with that? Because, yeah, obviously there was a slight chance it was a false positive, but at the end of the day, he got a test, and he tested positive, and there was a chance that he caught it from, you know, the parameter. There was a clear sort of history of where he could have been exposed to the virus. And I think, you know, it just wasn't helpful to me for people to kind of say, oh, it might have been a false positive. I guess for me, it just, you know, I had enough on my plate, let alone having people then say, oh, but it could be this or it could be that. I kind of just needed, I suppose, just to keep it as simple as possible. But nonetheless, I'm so grateful of people caring enough to say those things and think those things, and for it to be on their mind enough for them to come and talk to me about it. You know, it made a big difference to me. But yeah, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that he didn't get the symptoms. I still can't believe he didn't get the symptoms and that he's okay. I'm over the moon. You know, this is such a serious situation. I've treated it as a very serious situation, and to come out the other side is really something, you know. And I didn't lose him. I'm really, really grateful. And I suppose it's just taken me time to kind of, my tiredness has finally gone. I had to get some Broca Boost. That helped me a lot. I needed that. And as soon as I started taking that, I started getting my energy back. Then I was starting to be able to play catch up and get back on top of my sort of to-do list. And I'd say that I'm there now, and hence recording this episode, because I'm sort of ready to get back to business as usual. So that's my story. That's my brush with coronavirus, with a happy ending. If you're still listening, thank you for listening. And what I want to say is please, can you share this episode? Because this is a story that I think may benefit people. It would have benefited me if I'd had someone talk about all these things, because then I wouldn't feel like I was going crazy at certain points. You know, and I know that I got off lightly, that he, you know, he was asymptomatic in the end. But it was a hard slog. So please share this episode to people that may benefit from it, just to get the word out and just to support people. And if there's anyone that is struggling, you know, get in touch. There's loads of ways of getting in touch with me, like Instagram, direct messages, a voicemail system on this podcast. Just need to go to the show notes below and you'll see the voicemail thing. You know, don't suffer on your own. There's lots of people out there to help you. Okay, thank you for listening. I promise I'll get back to food in the next episode. Take care. Bye.